From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is December 1st, 2011, and by the end of this month, U.S. troops will be out of Iraq after nearly 9 years of blood, sweat, and tears. Then what? Well, look around. Right next door, Iranians this week stormed and sacked the British embassy. Iran, under pressure on its nuclear program, is looking for ways to hit back. And there's Iraq. This hour On Point countdown to the withdrawal. Will this region hold? You can join the conversation. Have you seen the U.S. troops pouring out of Iraq? Are you cheering? What do you see coming in this region? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The U.S. troops are coming out. Hear from a recent BBC report. Description of withdrawal of troops from Iraq, these going south from Baghdad.
Camp Kalsu must be the busiest military truck stop in Iraq. Every day, long convoys snake their way through this base as they head southward out of the country.
Out of the country, Vice President Joe Biden in Iraq this week. A surprise visit there. Here he is saying Wednesday, yesterday, that the promised troop withdrawal from Iraq by the end of the month, the year, will proceed as planned, ushering in a new relationship between the United States and Iraq.
We kept our promise to withdraw our troops from Iraq's cities in 2009. We kept our promise to end our combat mission in the summer of 2010. And now we are keeping our promise we made back in 2008 to remove our troops from Iraq by the end of this year.
And most Americans very happy for those troops to be coming home. But it is not a tidy neighborhood. On Tuesday, we saw swarms go over the walls into the British embassy just next door in Iran, in Tehran. Here's one of those protesters.
We want to show to the entire world our hatred for the British and the American governments like we did 30 years ago when we closed the U.S. embassy. Today, this embassy must be closed too.
What next? Joining me first today from Beirut is Farnaz Fasihi, senior writer for the Wall Street Journal, covering the whole region. Farnaz, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for inviting me.
Give us a sense of what prompted that kind of amazing sacking of the British embassy that brought to mind, of course, all the troubles at the American embassy so many decades ago. What pushed these people to do this thing this week, Farnaz?
I think that the international pressure building up against Iran, starting from the allegations by the U.S. that Iran was plotting a terror attack on Saudi ambassador in Washington, and then subsequently an important human rights report from the United Nations documenting the Iranian government's abuses of human rights, and then the International Atomic and Energy Agency report that Iran was secretly pursuing a military nuclear program. These have all prompted Iranians to be very defensive. We've seen in the past month a number of very provocative comments by Iranian officials that if Iran is attacked, if there are sanctions, that they would retaliate. And I think all of this sort of built up this anger and, you know, the people who ransacked the embassy do not represent all of the Iranian students. Iran is a divided nation. You know, you have the pro-democracy opposition supporters and then the government loyalists and the Basij militia, which organized the events.
The besieged militia, I mean, they don't represent all the students. I don't know if they represent much of any of them. I mean, this is the same besieged militia that put down the students just a couple of years ago in the so-called Green Revolution. Is it not, Farnaz? This is...
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. The besieged militia is a volunteer task force of about 1 million to 2 million people, and they are basically plainclothes militia. They're under the command of the Revolutionary Guards, which is an elite military force in Iran. And they are really always tasked with coming out and cracking down on any dissent. And, you know, in Iran, not even five people can gather without security circling around them and cracking down. So the notion that the Iranian government did not know or the security forces could not have prevented this is ludicrous. Because we see from the pictures that the security forces were standing aside and allowing these angry mobs to basically storm the embassy.
You call them a task force on video. They look like thugs. Now, here's the formula that you laid out, Farnaz. Iran saying If you impose sanctions, we will retaliate. Now, sanctions are being imposed, and stiffer sanctions. And now we see this British embassy attack. What is it about the latest round of sanctions, and the British in a way out front on this, I guess, Farnaz, that is making them bite more deeply, more keenly than earlier sanctions?
Because they're becoming more and more internationally isolated, the recent rounds of sanctions announced by Britain and the U.S. target Iran's central bank. Iran's central bank is one of the last remaining banks where Iran can actually do banking transactions and receive oil revenues. So it's really targeting the heart of the regime's economy. They are really feeling the heat of these sanctions and also the isolation. You know, investments, foreign investments in Iran are down. It's true that they have looked to Asia to replace some of the businesses that they've lost with the West, with China and Russia and India. Tuesday's attack on the British embassy does not help Iran's case when it argues that it's a rational government and it's an international player. In fact, it puts a big question mark as to whether this government can be trusted.
Farnaz, so here's a sanctions, then retaliation example. We may see more of that. We may see it in other venues. U.S. troops pulling out right next door. All kinds of things have been happening in Iran. It was just, last week or week before we saw this huge explosion, November 12th, at the big military base just 25 miles from Tehran. Remind us what happened there, and do Iranians describe that as an accident in a missile program of their own or as sabotage?
What happened was that a massive explosion happened and was heard all the way to Tehran, which is about 25 kilometers away from where this military base was. It was a base for the Revolutionary Guards, and reportedly it's where they kept their Shahab missiles, their long-range missiles, which have the capacity to hit Israel. And the Iranians said that they were moving military equipment and the explosion happened. Satellite images have shown extensive damage to the compound, and there have been suspicions whether this was sabotage, whether this was an attack, nobody really knows. All we know is that there's been extensive damage, and they were moving military equipment around, possibly maybe in fear of military strikes. They were trying to hide them. Nobody really knows.
Farnaz, how do you see the potential for the tension and rivalries inside Iran to spill over into Iraq as U.S. troops pull out?
I think as U.S. troops pull out, Iraq will be an important platform for Iran to extend its influence. I mean, Iran has been very influential in Iraq since the U.S. invasion in 2003 because of the close relationship it has with Shia politicians in Iraq. And I think in the absence of U.S. troops, that role could intensify. They could be more influential. They could possibly, the rivalry between Iran and Saudi Arabia for regional influence can really manifest itself in Iraq. I think Iraq and Afghanistan is someplace that we have to watch carefully for what Iran might do.
Both immediate neighbors of Iran. Farnaz Farsihi, senior writer for The Wall Street Journal, joining us there from Beirut. Farnaz, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
Outrage in Tehran over the British and their sanctions. Outrage in the UK. Here's British Foreign Secretary William Hague. This is talking to Parliament in London on Wednesday, announcing the immediate closure of the British embassy in Tehran, already been sacked, but also evacuation of diplomatic staff after rioters stormed and ransacked the building in response to new economic sanctions.
This is a breach of international responsibilities for which any nation should be ashamed. The idea that the Iranian authorities could not have protected our embassy or that this assault could have taken place without some degree of regime consent is fanciful. The safety of our staff and of other British nationals in Iran is our highest priority. We have now closed the British embassy in Tehran. We have decided to evacuate all our staff.
The British Foreign Secretary on Wednesday. Joining me now from Tampa, Florida, is Mohsin Milani, Iran-born, professor of politics, chair of the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida in Tampa, currently working on a book about Iran's regional politics. Mohsin Milani, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on the program.
How do you interpret, we'll keep it local first before we spill across the border, but how do you interpret what happened with the British Embassy in Tehran this week, Professor?
I think there are two principal reasons behind the attack that I think was sanctioned by some elements of the Iranian regime. One is that the U.S. has, the U.K. has been tightening sanctions against Iran and, in fact, has tightened sanctions even more than the U.S. has, and that has angered Iran's ayatollahs. The second reason is that, as far as Tehran is concerned, London is playing a destructive role in not allowing Iran to create a wedge between the United States and the European Union. In other words, they see England as a as one powerful European country that is neutralizing Iran's strategy to create a division between Washington and the European countries when it comes to sanctions and Iran's nuclear program. Regardless of the reasons for the attack, I honestly think that the attack on the British embassy was a huge mistake by the students, by the so-called students. It is in violation of international law. It is in violation of international norms, and it is in violation of human decency. The Islamic Republic, the Foreign Ministry of the Islamic Republic has apologized, but that is not good enough.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Iraq, Iran, and big questions as U.S. troops head home. Sacking of the British Embassy in Tehran this week. Echoes of long ago conflict between Iran and the United States when so many were taken hostage in the American Embassy years ago. Here's the sound of from that storming of the embassy and a residential compound in Tehran Tuesday, smashing windows, burning the flag, all to protest new sanctions imposed by London. Here's what one protester in the crowd had to say.
We're here to say anyone who is not honest with Iran that this is their fate. What the UK's done to Iran is the fault of those who let the Brits into Iran, and this should be a lesson to them. They should be aware that this is the will of the Iranian youth and students, and we won't yield to any pressure.
Youth and students, but this was the Basij militia, government-controlled, also evidence of a push by at least some portion of the Iranian government. President Obama responded swiftly on Tuesday, condemning the attack, saying the Iranian government must act more responsibly.
That kind of behavior is not acceptable, and I strongly urge the Iranian government to hold those who are responsible to task. They have a responsibility to protect diplomatic outposts. That is a basic international obligation that all countries need to observe, and for rioters essentially to be able to overrun the embassy and set it on fire is an indication that the Iranian government is not taking its international obligations seriously.
Rioters overrunning an embassy, setting it on fire, but right next door is Iraq. What happens when the last U.S. troops leave? And that is happening right now. It's December 1st. By the end of this month, last U.S. troops out of Iraq. We've been joined from Tampa, Florida, by Mohsen Milani, professor at the University of Florida in South Florida, in Tampa. Joining me as well now from Washington is Phoebe Marr, historian, longtime analyst of Iraq and the region. Her book, The Modern History of Iraq, is just out in its third edition. Plenty of updates there. She's co-editor of Iraq, Its Neighbors, and the United States, Competition, Crisis, and the Reordering of Power. Phoebe Marr, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Nice to be here.
So here's the embassy sitting right there in Tehran, big, fat, easy target. They've done this before. Now, these are discrete events, but as U.S. troops pull out of Iraq, is Iraq a target for Iran's wrath as the pressure grows around its nuclear program, Phoebe?
Well, I think this is a this is really a fight between the United States and perhaps Europe and Iran rather than Iraq. As everyone knows, the new administration, which is predominantly Shia in Iraq, is relatively friendly to Iran, and of course, that's the way Iran wants to keep it. Now, there may be some spectacular blow-ups or something as the troops leave, as they may be a focus of attack. But actually, once the American troops leave, that leaves one less thing for the Iranians to attack in Iraq. They may focus on our great big embassy. In fact, there was some kind of military action within the Green Zone the other day. But I think this is going to be a struggle for power politically. Iran is going to use its soft power in Iraq to compete with U.S. Influence. We've already seen this, and we can see it behind the scenes. We just saw it, for example, in the Arab League vote on Syria, where Iraq, for example, abstained on sanctioning Syria and so on, partly for its own reasons, but also partly because of Iranian influence. That's the kind of thing I think we're going to see, a continued struggle to reduce American influence, such power as it has, and so on, in Iraq.
Mohsen Milani, do you agree? And if it's going to be a political conflict, not an armed conflict, we'll look at that. And, of course, we're not saying it's Iraq that would be pushing back here, though, you know, there's all kinds of allies here. But if Iran looks to make life difficult for the United States in Iraq after the withdrawal of troops, if it's soft power that they want to exert, what would be the evidence of that exertion of power, Mohsen?
I think Iran has already achieved its main strategic goals in Iraq. There is a friendly Shia government in Baghdad. Iran is heavily engaged in reconstruction of Iraq. And Iran has already established a powerful sphere of influence in southern part of Iraq, very close to Saudi Arabia. Once the American troops leave, I think Iran will do everything it can to consolidate what it has achieved. But the key element that will determine whether Iran will play mischief in Iraq or plays a constructive role is what happens to Syria. If the Assad regime falls and is replaced by a government that is not friendly to Iran, I expect Iranian involvement to increase in Iraq, become much more destructive. And I think the minute the American troops leave Iraq, Iran and Saudi Arabia will begin a very fierce competition by Saudis supporting the the Sunnis and the Iranians supporting the Shiites. And therefore, we are going to see increased polarization of Iraqi politics and, unfortunately, increased sectarian tension.
Well, you have said, Mohsen Milani, that Iraq will become the center of the fight that you and Phoebe Marr both point out between the United States and Iran. You're saying that could be very destructive, but paint a picture of that. How would it be destructive? What consequence? What, you know, okay, so they have more influence. So what? How does it matter? How does it come to destruction, in your words?
Well, what I mean by this is that if you look at the post-Saddam period from 2003 until today, Iran has played a role in Iraq that sometimes have complemented American policy and sometimes have not. To be perfectly honest with you, if you look at Iraq's neighbors, I think Iran has been the strongest supporter of the pro-American governments that have been established in Iraq. Now, should this competition between the U.S. and Iraq become more intense, I guess what Iran can do is, as Phoebe was correctly saying, is to begin to undermine American troops or a few American troops that will remain in Iraq. I think you're going to see increased tension between Iran and the U.S. over the question of Bahrain. I think the key point about Iranian foreign policy and its competition with the U.S. is that it would be a huge mistake to look at Iran and its policy towards Iraq in isolation from what Iran is doing in Afghanistan, in Bahrain, in Syria, and in Lebanon. In other words, I think if we look at this from a holistic point of view, when Iranian position is undermined in Syria, is undermined in Bahrain, is undermined in Afghanistan, or Iranians or the sanctions against Iran become stiffer, then I think you're going to see Iran playing a more destructive role in Iraq by undermining American interest in Iraq.
We'll look at that broader picture. Americans clearly very aware of the possibility of Iranian intervention here. Here's a little bit from an interview on NBC's Meet the Press. This is in late October. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton warning, you'll hear at the end of this, Iran against misreading the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. She said the U.S. will still be very much committed to the fledgling Iraqi democracy.
We are providing a support and training mission. We will be there on the ground working with the Iraqis. And I just want to add, David, that no one should miscalculate America's resolve and commitment to helping support the Iraqi democracy. We have paid too high a price to give the Iraqis this chance. And I hope that Iran and no one else miscalculates that.
Iran and no one else. Phoebe Marr, you know, she's saying nobody should miscalculate. If Iran decides this is a leverage point for them, and we'll look at other potential leverage points, but if they decide we can make trouble for Americans here, how would that trouble show up? What would it look like? What would it mean, Phoebe?
Well, I have to say that I think, well, I agree with most of what has been said here. Iraq is and other countries are going to be the seat of a struggle for power among neighbors and, of course, the United States included. But we need to remember that this concept of a vacuum may be overdone because Iraq is essentially there. It's a country which is fragile. Its government is still weak, and hence neighbors can meddle. But still, the Iraqis have agency. They have increasing agency. Mm-hmm. They have their own troops. And we're essentially talking here about Iraq. And while they certainly don't want any trouble with Iran, they don't want to be the center of this struggle between the United States and Iran. They're Iraqis. They're predominantly Arab and some Kurds. And there's going to be pushback, not from the United States only, but from Iraqis themselves on too much influence from Iran. And frankly, they're going to want something to balance that. And guess who that might be? That might be the United States. So let's not forget that the Iraqis have their own interests, and there's a long history of competition and struggle with Iran. For example, on oil, as Iraq begins to develop its own oil, that is certainly going to be competitive with Iran. Even religion, Najaf, of course, wants to be a major center, maybe the major
pilgrimage center for Shia.
Not just pilgrimage, for theology, for interpretation of Shiism, and so on. The Kurds have never been particularly pro-Iranian, and we need to bring in Turkey, because one of the big players in all of this is going to be Turkey, which is playing a more independent role, has been very helpful, I think, in Iraq. So the name of the game in Iraq is to not only stabilize Iraq, but to create a more cohesive, strong central government, which is democratic, which can stand on its own. And presumably the United States is going to make an effort to do that, helping them mediate disputes between the Kurds on oil, on this and that, so that they can stand up to Iran. Iran would like to have as much influence as possible over that government. And so that's where the struggle is going to be in Iraq. Who's in power there? Who can use the power structure to achieve their aims? And I suggest that rather than being a military struggle in Iraq, it's going to be much more political.
And Iraq, as you say, has its own interest in stability and rebuilding here, though not necessarily exactly a unified interest. Let's go to our listeners, Richard in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Richard, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. There was a report in the New York Times a few weeks ago about even though we're withdrawing in Iraq and ultimately Afghanistan, but the administration plans on keeping a force in Kuwait. They have this group over there that called the Gulf Cooperation Council.
Yes.
And it makes up of these regimes that haven't had the Arab Spring hit them yet, but they're very oppressive countries, you know, the United Arab Emirates and
all around
Kuwait,
the Gulf.
Saudi
Arabia. Sure. Yep. And not just to maintain it, not just maintain a presence in Kuwait, that report was, as I'm sure you recall, Richard, but to bolster it, to build it up substantially in Kuwait.
And I think there's going to be a lot of resentment over the long haul, the way things are going on now in the Middle East, Tom.
Well, I mean, resentment or welcoming, I mean, I wonder how that plays out. Phoebe, let me bring that one to you. There's also reports of the U.S. hoping that Iraq can kind of be pulled into this Gulf community where the U.S. has a lot of influence, Saudi Arabia and right on down. On the other side of that, there's the fear of Iraq becoming a kind of client state of Iran. You say they will have their own reasons not to do that. Is it realistic for the United States to kind of corral Iraq into the Gulf orbit here, the Gulf states orbit? Do you see them attempting that?
Well, there's always been a thought that that would make a stronger strategic framework in the Gulf. Good luck. There's been talk about it for decades, and it's less likely today than before. And I think what we have to guard against here is a very strong pull, especially from Saudi Arabia, away from Iraq. In fact, the GCC itself is afraid of Iran. And let's be frank here. Iraq is now viewed as a predominantly Shia country, and all of those Gulf states in the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC, are Sunni dominated. Now, one of the things we want to guard against, if we can, is a real recrudescence of sectarianism. Sunni states versus Shia. And this is a very dominant theme now in the Gulf, and particularly Bahrain. For example, Shia community in Iraq to a large extent has supported the opposition in Bahrain, which is by no means quieted and is essentially Shia against a Sunni ruling regime. That's a point of contention. Saudi Arabia has not yet accepted the Shia government of Maliki in Iraq, and that is very contentious. And seen from the Iraqi side, their struggle is with extreme Sunnis in their own country, al-Qaeda, ex-Baathists, and so on. And there's a lot of blogging and talk, for example, that that Saudi Arabia is supporting them. I don't believe they're supporting them officially, but unofficially, there's a lot of money going across the border and so on. So this relationship is contentious, as well as continuing problems, old problems between Iraq and Kuwait. So there isn't going to be any inclusion, I'm absolutely certain, of Iraq in some kind of GCC security. But we have to work in the United States to shore up a better relationship between the GCC and Iraq.
Mohsen, is it an opportunity for Iran? Does it gain leverage as the U.S. pulls troops out of Iraq, pulls down in Afghanistan, is sort of got its own problems with Pakistan on the other side of Afghanistan? Is this leverage for Iraq at a time when people are really putting the arm on it over its nuclear program?
I think it depends how Tehran plays its hand. Potentially, I think it is a great opportunity for Iran, as I said earlier, to consolidate its gain in Iraq. But the important point about Iran's regional status and about Iran's regional power is that we should not exaggerate the power Iran has in Iraq. It is true that Iran's an influential player in Iraq, but Iran cannot determine the landscape of Iraq. I think the best way to describe Iranian power is to describe it as a spoiler power. Iran is powerful enough to make it difficult for the U.S. and the West to achieve their goal, but it is not powerful enough to shape the landscape of Iraq or any of the Persian Gulf countries.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Iraq, Iran, and big questions as U.S. troops head home. It's December 1st. They're headed out by the end of this month. We've seen trouble in Tehran this week at the British Embassy, U.S. battalions pulling out of Baghdad. Question is, Will this region hold? What will it look like on the other side of this withdrawal? Phoebe Maher is with us this hour, author of The Modern History of Iraq, just out in its third edition with plenty of updates in that country's history. Mohsen Milani joins us from the University of South Florida in Tampa. Joe Biden in the region just this last couple of days saying, we're going to be steady here, we're going to be supportive, even as our troops come home. Newt Gingrich in Republican foreign policy debate with the other presidential contenders. This was November 23rd here. CNN's Wolf Blitzer asked Newt Gingrich about Iran.
If we were serious, we could break the Iranian regime, I think, within a year, starting, candidly, with cutting off the gasoline supply to Iran and then, frankly, sabotaging the only refinery they have.
But sanctions on the Iranian central bank now, is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a good idea if you're serious about stopping them having nuclear weapons. I think replacing the regime before they get a nuclear weapon without a war beats replacing the regime with a war, which beats allowing them to have a nuclear weapon. Those are your three choices.
Replacing the regime, sabotaging the only refinery they have, break the Iranian regime. That's big talk from Newt Gingrich. Phoebe Maher, Mohsen Milani, let's pull the curtain back a little bit and look at this whole region. Phoebe, let me come first to you. How do you see this playing out? We have all the way from, Tunisia to Pakistan. Incredible change, upheaval, turmoil, call it what you like. Evolution, a triumph of the people, but it's all kinds of change. And now we've got U.S. troops on the outward path here. Many Americans will be happy for that. But could we see, sort of mayhem in this next year leading up to the presidential election, Phoebe? Could things get really teetery here?
Well, that concerns the so-called Arab Spring. People are also calling it a revolution or whatever.
But it's really beyond the Arab Spring, right? I mean, that's in the western end of this and echoes of it maybe in Bahrain, but then right on across to Iran and Pakistan, you've got things really on tenterhooks.
Well, the region is going to be what I would call unstable, not just for the coming year, but for some time to come as this upheaval takes its course. We should not expect stability in this region anytime soon. We're going to have to deal with the unexpected. We're going to have to deal probably with it not as a region as a whole, but country by country. So it is going to be unsettling. And while Iran and our struggle over the nuclear weapons there is going to be probably a centerpiece of that, it's not going to be the only thing. These countries themselves, I want to keep emphasizing, mm-hmm. are the ones who are going to be, to a large extent, determining where things go. The idea that we on the outside can pull all the strings, I think, is a fallacy. We're going inevitably to have to be reacting to what happens in the region. So I wouldn't expect stability. What you see is what you're going to get. I don't expect a collapse, but it's going to be destabilizing, unquestioning, and the balance, there's going to be a struggle and in terms of the balance of power and who maintains some influence in all of these countries and the degree and the means by which we can do that, because it's the countries themselves who are going to increasingly determine this course.
Mohsen, do you think that the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq, the path toward drawdown in Afghanistan, could it have the effect of actually stabilizing things as these countries look around and say, hey, we've got to keep things together ourselves. There's no U.S. force to lean on. Or do you see it that element, the troop withdrawals, as destabilizing?
I think the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq and from Afghanistan will have very little impact on what is happening in the so-called Arab Spring. I think what is taking place in the Arab world is absolutely fascinating. But what is beginning to look like trouble is that instead of democratic forces, secular forces, replacing the old corrupt autocratic regimes in Egypt, in Tunisia, and Libya, what we are witnessing is the rise of new Islamists in all three countries, in Egypt, in Tunisia, and Libya. In other words, I think the West and the United States must prepare themselves to deal with a new generation of Islamists who are going to, in my judgment, form close alliances with their respective militaries in Tunisia, in Libya, and Egypt. To me, that is the future of that region. For the Persian Gulf region, and for Afghanistan, I really don't see a great deal of instability taking place there. It is in the interest of the West and in the interest of the United States, as well as the interest of the local governments, to have a stability there. Because if we do not have political stability in that region, it is going to have a profound impact on economic recovery on the global level. Therefore, I would say that it is very likely that we're going to see some degree of tension and instability in Iraq, but I don't think Iraq is going to become unstable or dangerous after the withdrawal of American troops in December of this year.
It's good to hear, but Islamists plus national militaries as the new norm or the new mold, that's going to be something to watch. Sheikh Ahmed, calling from Boston, you're on the air.
All right. Tom, I asked you 2 or 3 months ago about Iranian tanks fighting in Syria. And it was kind of something that is not imaginable. And now I'm repeating almost the same question, especially that I think that Syria now is the center of the fight between the United States and the Iranians. Because of the Hezbollah and the Alawites as allies of and proxies of Iranians. Iran has to fight the war on other lands, like in Lebanon or Palestine or Syria, before it comes to it. I don't think that Iraq is now an issue for Iran because it's already fallen in its hands. Do you think that there will be tanks from Iran again in Syria to defend its only shield in the region? And do you think that the United States will go towards, push things towards the Libyan scenario, where you have the Syrians supported by Western or whatever Air Force, and the Syrians do the job? And
Ahmed, let us pick it up right there, if you would, Ahmed. Phoebe, Mohsen, let me come to each of you. But Mohsen, first to you. There were these reports some time ago now, I believe, of Iranian tanks in Syria. I don't know if that was ever confirmed. But you hear Ahmed's question about how far Iran may go to try and keep alive its closest ally in the region in Syria. What about that triangle, Iran, Syria, Iraq? How do you see that playing out, Mohsen?
Well, Syria is the centerpiece of Iran's entire Levant strategy. And should the Assad regime fall, I think it is going to be probably the single greatest foreign policy defeat for the Islamic Republic in the past few years. It is through Syria that Iran supports the Lebanese Hezbollah, which is Iran's most significant strategic asset in the entire Islamic world. I think Iran seeks to support the Assad regime as much as possible. I think the reports about Iranian tanks going to Syria are unconfirmed. I personally don't think it is accurate. Iran is supporting Syria. There is no doubt about it. They have said it. They have provided logistical support of different kinds. But if push comes to shove, Iran's second option is to have Assadism without Assad. In other words, what happened in Egypt is that after Mubarak was overthrown, the leader was replaced, but the bastion of support for the leadership in Egypt, that is the Egyptian military, has remained the most powerful force in Egypt. Now, Iran's option B is that if they should stop supporting Assad, is to keep intact the Syrian military and security forces. That is why I call it Assadism without Assad. Now, whether Iran can achieve this goal or not is yet to be seen, because not only Saudi Arabia is pursuing policies that are diametrically opposed to Iran, not only the West is moving in a different direction, but most importantly, Turkey has also joined Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries and have called for the end of Assad regime. I think Assad has lost the legitimacy to rule. He has killed over 3,000 heroic Syrians, and Assad must go.
P.B. Maher, look at this calculus with us then around Iraq, Syria, and of course, as Mohsen Milani says, this gets into Iran's Levant strategy. That brings it to the doorstep in Lebanon of Israel. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the nuclear program, what the different kinds of sabotage that may have already taken place. There have been assassinations there, and talk more recently, potentially once again, about Israeli intervention in Iran. Does U.S. troops coming out make it easier for Israel to go in if indeed they're calculating in that direction, Phoebe?
I don't know that it does, because frankly, this whole business of, gee, the troops are withdrawing immediately. The troops have hardly been there. They've been drawn down for some time.
Fewer than 13,000 now.
That's right. The last of them are leaving. And we have an agreement with Iraq on paper, pretty officially, both with the SOFA, which is now coming to an end, and our continuing strategic framework. Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. But we have a continuing strategic framework agreement with Iraq that quite specifically says that we have to protect their air, and the Iraq cannot be used as a launch pad for an attack on any of its neighbors.
What about overflight? Let's say
that's
by Israeli
correctly
jets.
That's exactly what it's directed against.
Interesting.
Overflight.
Okay.
So that's already been factored in. There are many ways in which Israel might do this. I can't address what Israel is going to do, and we hear a lot of talk about that in Washington. Many people would consider such an attack sort of something you might keep on the books as a threat, but a really disaster scenario. So that would be, I think, the most destabilizing thing that could possibly happen in the area, and it doesn't seem likely to me at the present moment.
Let's get a call from Minu in Lexington, Kentucky. Minu, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that I'm an Iranian-American.
Yes.
Or American-Iranian. I don't know
Good.
Which.
Okay, we'll take it.
That is my fatherland that I was born in. And I just wish there were better relations. Now, my relatives come back and forth from there. But there's a lot of misunderstanding, and it's a horrible feeling to think that there's so much conflict going on. And I'd like to grasp a better understanding of it myself.
It is, of course, a bad feeling, and it's gone on for so long now. I mean, Mohsen, looking at Iran, you know, if Syria goes, maybe goes away from them. Maybe they keep a hand in with Assadism, if not Assad, as you say. But is there a point at which Iran's strategy changes here? Do you see a real struggle within Iran of any kind to sort of adopt a less adversarial position here? You know, maybe after some years of advances there, in another sense, is there a kind of retreat now? Are things turning against them? Might it be in their interest to go for stability as well?
I certainly hope so. I think if we have an entirely new government in Syria, a government that is no longer friendly to Iran, then Iran has to reformulate its Levant strategy. What is, I think, most promising is that the Green Movement is alive and well. Despite
Green as in reformist movement, the students we saw in the streets a couple of years ago.
That is right. You will recall that in June of 2009, we had our own Persian Spring. And that Persian Spring was the beginning of the so-called Arab Spring. Immediately after the disputed presidential election, some 2 million Iranians took to the streets and demanded, "Where is my vote?" which shows that democracy is a powerful force in Iran. And despite 2 years of brutal suppression of the Green Movement by the Islamic Republic, I don't believe that movement is dead. I think it is alive. And most importantly, there is now an alternative to the Islamic Republic, to, I think, the wrong strategies and policies of the Islamic Republic, which has isolated Iran and which has deprived Iran of the ability to have economic development and playing a major role in that region. The alternative to the Islamic Republic is that Iran, I think, under a more reformist government, can begin to have decent and good relationship with the United States as well as the Western world. I think the policies that Iran have pursued in the past 20 years, yes, has increased Iran influence in the region. But at the end of the day, they have not resulted in improved economic conditions for the majority of the Iranians. And hopefully, one of these days, we are going to see the wiser heads prevailing in Iran and changing Iran's overall strategy
We just got 20 seconds here, Phoebe. The next 10 months really matter politically in the United States. Do you see turmoil in Iraq, or do you see slow stabilization there? If you had to guess today.
I see more likelihood of slow stabilization if Iraq is helped from abroad on its economic and social policy, but kind of left alone to knit the fabric of the state and society together. It's already doing that. I see steps in terms of oil development. So I do not see a collapse or destabilization. Iraq slowly moving.
Let it knit together for its sake and ours. Phoebe Marr, Mohsen Malani, thanks to each of you for being here. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.